Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 74, featuring Jonas Skoog from Black Studio in Stockholm, Sweden. We recorded this while we were at FMX, and Melissa was there with me, right, Melissa?
I was indeed.
It was pretty funny. We were walking down the street at FMX, and someone said, "Oh, you must be Melissa from the podcast intro."
It's because I'm the only British regular you have on that.
Okay. Yes, exactly. So you're the only British one. But it was funny that you got recognized by the podcast.
Yeah, you too, of course. Everyone knows you.
Well, yes, maybe. But anyway, it was fun to be at FMX this year. We did a lot of really great stuff.
We did. It was a very busy week. Very well attended.
Yeah.
Super busy and great booth presentations, and our V-Ray days went very well.
Yeah, yeah. V-Ray days has always been a big thing for us. I think one of the first ones happened a few years back. I wasn't an employee at the company, but I was one of the speakers, and it's always a good place to go to check out some really cool stuff. So whenever we're in town and we're doing a big event, make sure to check out our V-Ray days. They always tend to be pretty great. Jonas was a speaker for that. Yep.
With Henrik,
both from Black. Unfortunately, Henrik could not be there because he had to fly out. So I just had Jonas on this podcast, which was still really great. Mm-hmm. He talked to me about Black Studios, which is an interesting, it's a small studio in Stockholm, but they're part of a coalition of visual effects studios.
I like that word.
Yeah. And they work together, so they work with each other's strengths. So there's another studio that does a lot of motion capture, and they use their motion capture facility when they are able to do that. And sort of when their render farms are needed, they scale up with other people's render farms. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of a really great way to work as a coalition. Very Swedish, I guess. Very socialist. Everyone gets to be able to share from each other's resources.
Yeah.
I really like their work. They did a lot of great stuff. Jonas is the character lead over there, and does a lot of interesting work in the character world and humans, and is very interested in digital humans, which is also a really cool thing. All right, guys, hopefully enjoy it. I've got a lot of other great podcasts coming up in the following week, so make sure and stay tuned. Make sure and rate us on iTunes or any other podcast program that you're using. Make sure and let us know how you feel and what you'd like to hear. If you have suggestions of some great people you'd like to hear, let us know as well. I'd always like to hear your suggestions. I have been able to get a lot of those suggestions on the podcast myself, so please let them be known. All right, guys, thank you.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passé. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
I need it. How late were you up last night?
About 2 o'clock, I think.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is not your first FMX, is it?
It is. It is.
Really?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
I would assume you seem like a veteran, so.
Yeah, I've been around, but. Yeah.
But I mean, like a veteran to FMX.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I really like this event.
No?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. It's my second time here, and it's always really fun. There's great opportunities to talk to a lot of really cool people.
Definitely. And so much information regarding the science stuff behind it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think all of the events, there's lots of events I go to, they all have some of their power. I think a lot of the science stuff, I mean, a lot of papers, that's up to SIGGRAPH. SIGGRAPH is kind of really good at this. What I like about FMX is a lot more of the practical, like here's how to get shit done, you know, here's
exactly
what to do. Yeah. So I think those are sort of one of the really cool things that I like about it. I spending like a half an hour to an hour speaking to Richard Edlin yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, oh my God.
So cool.
It was pretty funny. Pretty funny. He and I were talking about the fact that he had the same glasses as me. And he was like, yeah, they're really expensive, but I've had them for almost like 20 years. And I was like, oh, well, good. That means they lasted. So they're
exactly
not that. So yeah, it was
good quality.
Fun. Yeah, exactly. It was pretty fun. All right. So listen, I'm going to know. Okay. You were telling me a story. What's your last name mean in Swedish?
My name is Jonas Skog, and Skog actually means forest in Swedish.
Forest.
Forest.
Oh, forest.
Yeah.
Ah, right.
Yeah. So okay. My name's Jonas Forest.
Jonas Forest. Okay. Yeah. I like it. All right.
Yeah.
And so where are you from, Sweden?
I'm from Stockholm.
You're from Stockholm.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that where your company is?
Yeah. Yeah. My company is called Black Studios.
Uh-huh.
And we're a visual effects company doing game cinematics and film and commercial stuff.
Yeah. But you're, how long has it been around?
The company Black has been around since 2014.
So it's fairly new.
Yeah.
Very
yeah,
new.
Yeah. But yeah. But the team behind it has been working together for at least 10 years.
Oh, okay. How did it form?
It formed... we worked at a company before as a team. We did exactly the same stuff, cinematics for games and film.
Okay.
But then we had a transition where we felt we had to... become bigger and seek new ground, so to speak. So we found this company called Fido in Sweden.
Okay.
Yeah, which is also a super awesome VFX company.
Yep.
And together with them, we formed like a company group called the Goodbye Kansas Group.
Okay.
Yeah. So now we are four companies under the same roof. We are Fido, Black, and Imagination Studios, which are a motion capture studio. So it's really handy to have them nearby.
Yeah. And you guys are all in the same building or something? Or?
No, actually, the three companies, Fido, Black, and a games company, it's in the same building in Stockholm, and Imagination Studios is in Uppsala.
Uppsala, okay.
Yeah, so it's a 45-minute drive from Stockholm. So it's
I know where that is. You know
you
why?
Do.
Yes, because I read the whole Millennial series.
Ah,
they go
good.
To Uppsala.
Good,
right?
Good.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of the whole Girl with a Dragon Tattoo.
These are really amazing movies.
Yeah. Well, I read the books,
yeah.
Right? And actually, there's a fantastic translator for the books, because I actually did the audiobooks as well
when
I'm driving. When I drive, it's audiobooks and podcasts.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember going to Uppsala, and I was thinking, and I said, okay, a couple things. I believe that in Sweden, based on this book, all they do is drink coffee and eat sandwiches.
That's so strange.
Because they keep talking about, I'll have a coffee and a sandwich. And it's like all the time.
Well, the coffee drinking, that must be true.
That's true. I know. Yeah. I heard, I talked to the guys from ILP, Important Looking Pirates.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were telling me that coffee is like a very important thing.
It is. Yes, dude. Boost your energy,
dedicated coffee breaks and stuff.
You should see our coffee machine in the mornings when we have our meetings.
Yeah,
it's such a long line of people trying to get coffee. It's crazy.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, how big is your company?
Well, I think we are about 50 people right now.
You went and started in 2014 and you now have 50 people?
No, it's the group as a whole.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I think we're around 50 people. Black Studios, we are around 15, I think.
Okay, well, that's still pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so, but you sort of worked, so you work with the other studios almost like they're part of your company,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we work seamlessly and we change artists back and forth between Fido and Black.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
So if we take in freelancers, they can just jump onto another project.
And how does that work? I mean, in terms of, obviously, if you work together,
yeah.
Do you guys share like the render farm together and all
yes,
that
we
stuff?
Yes, we do. Okay. So before we came to Fido as Black, we used Arnold for at least 5 years, I think. And when we came to work with Fido, they already had this render farm set up with V-Ray. So it just felt natural to change over to V-Ray. And it worked pretty much like we wanted to.
Right, good.
So, yeah, yes, so we're super happy.
Yeah, okay. And then, do you guys just take on different projects in each studio? Is that kind of how it works?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
So we focus about the same stuff as a base.
Right.
Fido is more into commercials and some feature film. And like I said, we do more cinematic style for games, intros, outros. but it's still 3D and VFX, so we can swap artists front and back, no problem at all.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's really, really cool.
Yeah.
And but, go ahead.
Yeah, but we're always expanding, so new people will come in every day.
Right.
You can't recognize a face from the next day.
Do you have a lot of freelancers?
Yeah, we do. We like to be able to scale up and down really fast for projects, so we have a steady stream of freelancers coming in.
Okay. Is there a good pool of freelancers in Sweden?
Yeah. There's a big pool of freelancers in Sweden as well as international freelancers. So.
Now, I've been seeing some interesting news in Sweden about the philosophies of the workforce and how you're working. But most of what I know in visual effects is or in animation, are they still work crazy hours? How are the hours for your animators and for working VFX and CG in Sweden?
Yeah, I think it's the same all over the world, pretty much. You can't avoid working overtime,
right?
Because you have to meet certain budgets,
and there's demand. Like, I want this and I need
it. Exactly. Yeah. Stuff changed along the way. Right. You have to meet the quality bar. Mm-hmm. So you can't get away from working overtime, but we try to keep it as low as possible. And usually it is not demanded unless super necessary. So,
okay.
Yeah, we try to stick away from it, but, you know.
Yeah. So what is a typical work hour for someone in Sweden?
We work 8 hours a day.
Okay.
It's a set time to work. So 8 hours a day, you include lunch for an hour.
Right.
So
okay, well that's a standard.
That's the typical full time.
But you do have overtime.
Yes, of course. Yeah. You can stay a couple hours late.
Okay.
Definitely, and that happens all the time. So,
do you get paid for overtime?
No, we don't.
Okay.
But if you, we can flex it. So if you work late one night, you can come in a little bit later the next day. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard. In California, you're not allowed to not charge for overtime. They try to.
Yeah.
But you're not allowed to do that. In fact, when you work, you have a unless you're a supervisor, at which point you're salary and then there's no other thing. But it's hard to make sure you be defined as a supervisor from a legal point of view. Means you have to have a certain amount of people that you oversee.
Ah, I see.
But as an artist or someone else, you get charged by the hour. So you have an hourly rate.
Okay.
And then anything over eight, you get charged 1.5 hours for 1 hour.
Oh.
And then anything over 12, then you get charged 2 hours for 1 hour.
Okay.
So it's actually very expensive, and everyone's like, I'm gonna make so much money on this overtime. And I said, you know, the point of overtime is not to encourage you to work more. It's to discourage people from letting you work.
Of course.
So it's interesting, but but I like the idea. Tell me some of the cinematics you've done in Over Black.
The last one that we did, that we had the presentation now, was Conan Exiles. Mm-hmm. It's a new game made by Funcom. Mm-hmm. It's a game company in Norway.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I don't have the specifics when it will be released or something like that, but it was a really fun project.
How long did you guys work on it?
I think it was 4 weeks for the teaser.
Okay.
But we'll see more stuff coming.
Okay.
And we've done stuff for God of War.
Right.
Yeah, lots of Battlefield work.
Yeah.
DICE in Stockholm. So since we are situated in Stockholm, like the core of Stockholm, we have all these great game companies around us.
Yeah.
Like DICE, Avalanche, we have Starbreeze in Uppsala, I think, or if they moved to Stockholm, I'm not sure, but...
Okay.
So we're really close by, so we can have these super great collaborations.
Right.
And swap information really fast.
Well, that's really cool. So tell people what your role at the company is, so that people have that, because I remember I was like, I gotta shoot. Let people know all this stuff.
Of course. So my role is lead character artist.
Okay.
Yeah. So I supervise and create all the characters for our cinematics.
Okay.
From the ground up.
Yeah.
We are at Black. We are actually two character artists.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's me and this really talented guy called Daniel Biestedt.
Uh huh.
And together we create most of the content.
Okay.
Yeah. And if we don't have time to create all the characters, we take in freelancing.
Sure, 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 sure. But how many, like, there must be a lot of generalists in the area, right?
Yeah, of course, of course.
But you focus on characters.
Yes.
So that means you're doing a lot of the rigging and animation as well, or?
No, I focus purely on sculpting, texturing, and shading.
Okay.
Yeah.
But do you guys, when you do your animation, you said you had the other motion capture studio, so do you do a lot of motion capture for your animation as well?
Yeah, we do all of the animation that we do at Black, at least, is motion capture.
Okay.
Yeah. And we even try to incorporate facial mocap as well.
Okay.
So we're expanding on that part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, cool. So let's go back to you being a character artist. So you do a lot of the sculpting, the texturing as well.
Yeah.
And the shading on it as well, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. What about the environment stuff? Do you have an environment team as well, or?
That is one of the parts that we try to focus more on, because that is one of our, I wouldn't say like weaker knowledge about it, but we definitely need to focus more on environments, because we feel that the character part of Black is quite solid.
Yeah.
So now we have to focus on the other parts to get up to par with quality.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, but since we are such a small team, we are like 10 artists, I think.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so we have such special departments, each of us.
Right, right.
So we bridge it as well. So with shading,
yep.
I was here with Henrik Eklund, which made a presentation with me. So he's our VFX supervisor.
Gotcha.
And he also does lots of the shading. So we try to blend between the roles as well, but still keep it specific. But it's great fun. But for me, it's purely character work.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's cool. I like the fact that you're focusing on characters. That's some really great ones. It doesn't sound too, I mean, like you said, you're much smaller. You're only 10 artists. So, yeah. But it doesn't sound dissimilar from the way I've seen things happen at Blur, where they have a little bit of focus on different areas, but allow people to just sort of do as much as they can all at once.
Exactly. Everyone got to contribute to the final look, of course. So if someone has time to help out, let's say for rigging, of course they can.
Okay. Yeah. Well, tell me a little bit more about what you were showing. You said, what was the name of the
presentation?
Yeah.
It was Digital Humans in Cinematics.
Yeah.
So I went through the creation of me creating foremost Conan for the trailer. I'm building him from the ground up using different sculpting techniques, texturing techniques, and so on. Just focusing on different softwares and like to show people like why we had chosen one or the other. So we are, let's say for texturing, we're using Mari as our primary
texture.
But we're also looking at some new and upcoming procedural texturing packages like Quixel and Substance. Because they are super cool and upcoming. They will take so much more place in the texturing world.
Have you tried the Quixel stuff?
Yeah, definitely. And a fun note about that as well is that it's a Swedish company.
Yeah, it is a Swedish company. I've actually met them. They're really nice guys. They've come over and shown us their scanner that they've done.
Oh, yeah, the Megascan
package. The Megascan thing, which is really cool. And it's different. I don't know if you know, but we've created our own scanner as well.
Yeah.
But it's a different thing.
The VR scan.
The VR scans,
yeah.
That's a BRDF scanner, and it's very specialized, and it's really meant for, mostly we see it being used by people in the industrial design area.
Yeah.
But the Quixel guys do scans of like just random nature things and like crazy stuff, and they're really great textures. Yeah. Basically, they create these textures, right?
Yeah.
And it's just assembled into a normal shader, right?
Exactly. Yeah, but the cool thing is that all the stuff is pre-calibrated to meet the PBR standards. Mm-hmm. So that is one of the foremost reasons that we use it, just to get the materials correct to begin with, and just to share that with lots of artists.
Yeah,
we can, and all the presets is super great.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're just hoping that Mar will come up to the same level.
Okay. But you can at least go in and start with those scans and
of
then
course.
Point paint on top of that and color around it. Yeah.
But we're super interested in the VR scans as well. Mm-hmm. But I'm guessing you get out a material file that you then plug into the shader?
You plug it into its own shader.
Yeah.
It's interesting. And this could change, but this is what it is now.
Yeah.
Because this is what we feel makes the most sense. It's a single file. You put it in, and then you once it's in the system, you will it just renders.
Yeah.
And you can't really edit it. There's no texture files out of it. People say, "Well, where is the diffuse channel?" Like there is there is none of that because it literally is a pure. Inverse, it's like reverse engineering the way that light works on it in the render.
Okay.
So it knows how something should look from every angle, every direction of light, and every angle of camera.
Yeah.
So it just recreates like, okay, since I'm looking at it through this ray, I know that it should be look like this, and it should be that color of light, and it knows exactly.
Okay.
What it does. Yeah.
But is it? Is it something you can use for more than just, let's say, if I scan, let's say, this carpet in here, then...
It'll look perfect.
Yeah, it will.
Yeah.
But if I decide to manipulate this carpet...
Yeah, you can't.
Exactly.
Because it's not necessarily what it's about right now. But that question has come up, and people want to go in and say, all right, well, I want to manipulate it, so what... unfortunately, we have to reverse engineer that to turn it into something that's like a blend, right? Because this is an actual reflectance map or BRDF, BTF technically. Oh. Where so for every pixel, it's a different, it's like a texture with a BRDF per pixel.
Okay.
So advanced. It's a lot. It's a lot of data. But we'd have to go in and say, okay, if I was a blend, what texture maps would I need to come out of this to recreate that? So that's basically the thing. So we're looking into that for sure because I think that's come up. But like I said, these are for people mainly like in the industrial area. They're like, I want to specify this material, scan it, and I want to look at what it looks like. And that's it. And they don't want it to edit it because the whole point is to see what it looks like naturally, right?
Yeah, of course. But the thing that we would like to get out of it is more like to get the technical stuff behind the material, you have to learn from it as well.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's definitely worth inspecting it and seeing what it does. Yeah, absolutely.
You have to send in a few different materials, let's say cloth, leather, and so on, just to get back an accurate result to evaluate it.
No, it's really valuable to see it that way.
Yeah.
And cloths do great, especially. Think of something that's a really complicated texture, like a pattern that from a cloth or... Yeah. Anything of that nature that would be really hard to create a shader, that's where it does really well. It doesn't do anything that's translucent.
No.
Or anything that got subsurface scattering. It does hard surface stuff or anything transparent of any kind.
Yeah.
Because that's a different kind of scanner. This is all about reflectance. But it is pretty cool how it works.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so you've got... Sorry, I'll go back to your stuff. So you're creating a character. You're obviously using Mari. You're doing some experiments in Substance Painter and Quixel.
Yes.
And what else do you show?
I showed some new techniques to create really fine pore details on characters.
Okay.
Tertiary details.
Yep.
using new alpha scans.
Okay.
This new website called the Texturing XYZ.
Oh yeah, I heard of them. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about them. What's special about them?
They scan surfaces. They create displacement surface scans. Mm-hmm. They are super high res. I think about 20,000 pixels wide.
Oh wow!
Yeah, just of faces.
Oh okay.
So you get super crisp details, and they are. They're stocked inside the RGB channels of the texture. Mm-hmm. So they're scanned in three different passes. So you get like the secondary pore details.
Yeah. And yeah, I've been dealing, I mean, with ICT data, we get displacement maps that are 16K.
Yeah.
So really big. And it makes a big difference.
Yeah, it does. Really, really.
Yeah, because you can simplify your specular model. Because now you're getting all the detail out of the actual geometry, right?
Yeah. So suddenly you doesn't even have to use roughness maps anymore because you get that stuff.
Yep, you just do one general glossiness value and then it works for everything. Yep.
Exactly. So that's great. And that's so when you did the digital EMILI, you used the 16K microsurface map. When you patched that together, did you use different like pore direction?
Yes,
you did.
So I didn't do it. ICT did it.
Yeah.
But what they do is you scan patches. Like I think it's like 2 centimeter by 2 centimeter or something like that. Patches of like 5 or 6 different areas of the skin, right?
Yeah.
And that gives them the high frequency data.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then they have a lower frequency data, which is the overall face, right?
Yes.
So they've got a 4K displacement map for the face, which they get from the natural process of doing the scan. And then they get these patches of high frequency data. And then they go in and they take the 4K map and they said, okay, based on pattern recognition and areas you are, fill in the rest of the 16K. So that's how it is.
Oh, okay. So,
but it doesn't replace the 4K map. It's just high frequency data that's added into it.
Yeah, like sitting on top of it too.
Right. And so you put the two together and you get this, you know, one big displacement map.
Yeah.
It was funny because I was looking at it yesterday. We were playing with it we're doing the new digital human, which is digital mic.
Yeah.
Because we're doing Mike Seymour as a new one. And Jay, who works at ICT, I work with her a lot, and she's great. She sent me the new displacement map, but she, I guess, only sent me the high frequency data, didn't have the low frequency data.
No.
And so I put it on him, and it didn't have all the other, you know, shapes on him.
Yeah.
It was just the base mesh and then all the shape.
The high frequency.
But it was just the high frequency data. And so because he didn't have the larger shapes, he looked like he was 20 years younger.
I was
like, wait a minute, that's weird.
So
it's kind of interesting.
But when you created a new data set on Mike, You said that you used the same shading model as you did for EMILI, right?
Yes.
Did you see? Did you have to tweak anything?
I haven't done anything.
No.
And the reason I didn't do anything is also I just didn't have time. I got the data like 2 days before FMX.
Yeah.
And I was like, let me just see if I can render something.
Yeah.
It's like I was worried. I was like, ugh, you know. But it actually looks pretty darn good.
Yeah, it looks super awesome.
Yeah, and I was happy because when I was telling Paul, I saw Paul Dubevic after the thing, and I said, you know, this is really great because this validates what we already know.
Yeah.
That if we've done it this way, then we apply the same methodology, same shader to just a new data set, and it should look exactly correct. So that means we're back at the same point that we were before.
That's great.
So now it makes a big difference. Yeah. So I'm very happy about that. And I really want to thank my good friend, Ian Spriggs who I've never met, but he's an awesome artist, and he was doing a lot of the fine sculpting on the head as well. And he just got an email from him that he's doing all the teeth. So we have a mold that we did of Mike's teeth.
Yeah, yeah.
And we got that scanned.
Ah.
And then we also, obviously, we have data scan. And then now I'm going to go to Zurich on Monday.
Yeah.
And I'm going to see the guys at Disney Zurich, and we're going to see the state of the eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it'll be really, really cool to see that kind of data set.
It's so cool that you can take all different components from Mike.
Yeah.
You just assemble them into a digital version of him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's going to be interesting. There's a lot of steps that have to take place.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, you know, everyone's volunteering their time to do it, so you kind of have to just take it when you can get it. You know?
Yeah, of course.
It's fun, though. Okay, well, not Emily, but I know it's cool that you have questions about it. But tell me more about what you've found in characters, or what you found to be the challenging part of your digital humans.
Yeah. Well, of course, since at work we try different techniques, and we have scanners, facial scans, mm-hmm. But it all depends on the budget of the job that you're
doing. Of course, right.
Like, so for Conan, we had to, since he's a fictional character as well,
mm-hmm.
We had to sculpt him from the ground up.
Yep.
So, of course, you get the difficulties to create something that is human-like and build up the different levels of details.
Mm-hmm.
And for the teaser, I had 2 weeks to finish Conan from like the belly and up.
Mm-hmm.
And he always in CG, you want these extreme close-up shots.
Yeah.
That is super hard to... Humans tend to look really lifelike, mm-hmm. like Mike, mm-hmm. on a certain distance.
Yes.
But as soon as you push closer... It breaks.
Sometimes it does, and sometimes it doesn't. I've actually seen, it's interesting, I've actually seen things where they look pretty, really good close up.
Yeah.
But when you zoom it out, you say, oh, something's not quite right. And it's usually the proportions aren't quite there.
Of course, of course.
So it's really strange. I don't know which part does what, but at the same time, like you said, someone asked us the other day, it was after the Wiki Human thing. It's like, well, how much, you know, do you scan everyone? It's like, no. Getting an ICT scan is expensive. We're very lucky to have the data set we do, because it shows people the quality of that data. But
exactly,
you can't necessarily afford to have it done all the time, right?
And it's, well, they spoke about the same thing with Terminator Genesis,
mm-hmm.
sculpting Arnold, with trying to match it into different plates from so many different movies.
And
it's really hard to do it without the scan.
Yeah.
But back to the difficulties with the close-ups.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, if you zoom in on a face, like the lips and stuff,
mm-hmm.
it will look great.
Mm-hmm.
But when you try to focus on the eyes, which is essential for characters, that's when it breaks.
That's when it breaks, fastest. Yeah. Eyes are the biggest part, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's so many components to eyes, right?
Yes, yes. And especially like eyelashes and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Since you need to see the strands going into the skin, you need the translucency to be as deep.
Because
if you see a hair stop at the surface, it breaks the illusion immediately.
Yeah, yeah. We're actually thinking, I'm wondering if it's possible to do that on a shader level. Like, if you know that there's a hair there, can you tell the skin there's a hair here and you need to penetrate that surface? Or create a fake shadow part. I don't know. I have to think about it. I have to ask Vlada what he thinks about it.
Because we always faked that in the past with using...
You just like cut colors, right? You're doing red color.
Exactly.
But we always did... I did eyelashes. Hair, like beards, or peach fuzz, eyebrows, et cetera, I did with the hair system.
Yeah.
But eyelashes, we always did with geometry.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, it seems like just hand placing strands of hair was actually easier in some cases. Luckily, eyelashes, they're very, very important, but there's also not as many of them.
Exactly. Much easier to place.
Much easier to hand place. Although I was talking to Ian Spriggs and I asked him, it's like, well, because all, have you seen his renderings?
Yeah, yeah.
I said, oh, how do you do your hair? What do you use for your hair? And he goes, oh, I just do that by hand.
Every single strand.
Every head on the hair he places in a spline.
What?
By hand.
But he has to...
He has no sculpting, no grooming tools.
No?
He just does it one strand at a time, places the hair.
Okay. But he must interpolate between strands. He can't do...
Yeah. He turns it into a hair system, obviously. Yeah. But
it's still... that. I think that's one of the cool features about ZBrush, that you can use fiber mesh.
Oh, right.
Yeah, because it speeds the workflow up so much.
Yeah.
I use it for hair, brows, lashes, even chest hair.
Wow.
He has to get the main direction of the hair.
Uh-huh.
And you can... sample the density of the hair as well.
Yeah.
So pretty much the hair guy, in our case Henrik, can just tell me how many hairs he wants, and I can just move the slider up and down until he's satisfied.
Yeah. And there's actually a very specific number. Is it? I think it's like 40,000 hairs for redheads.
Yeah.
Black hair is like 50,000, and then blonde is like 90,000 or something like that.
Yeah.
So there's actually numbers of, like, you know exactly how much. Well, there's much less on my hair right now, so I'm wearing a hat. There's actual values that you can sort of look at things.
Yeah, and it's really important to nail those values, because otherwise it will look doll-like as well.
Or too thick. Sometimes people have less hair and they just make it thicker, and then it just looks, something's wrong, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then you overcompensate the thickness of the strands instead if you have too less.
So, and then you have to watch out if you're using blonde hair. Oh my God, blonde hair is a nightmare.
Yeah. I saw that Maleficent render. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. I didn't sort of, because I didn't want to make it the point of the of that talk. But the reason, you know, a lot of V-Ray 3, the reason the hair got so much faster in V-Ray 3 is because of Maleficent.
Ah.
So we had one of our developers, Evilo, who came, he came to Digital Domain and hung out while we were doing Maleficent. Yeah. And his goals was to optimize V-Ray based on what we were doing.
Okay.
So we had Thistlewood, who was, you know, the crazy blonde hair, and he was like, okay, I did this, I made it this much faster, I made it this much faster, okay, this, and this much faster, this much faster.
Yeah.
And so the new hair shader in V-Ray 3 is now like up to 5 to 10 times faster compared to V-Ray 2.
That's crazy.
But things that would basically, like I said, it was like 20 hours to render her hair because of the amount of craziness that we were doing in there. It's gone down to 2 hours, which is pretty
That's
incredible.
That's a big difference.
Big difference. So that's pretty cool. So you have your hair stuff you're going on, and then what do you do on the shader side of things? What's your formula for your shader things, if you can tell me that?
Yeah, for the shading, we use the skin shader in V-Ray.
Okay.
And we try to texture the albedo for the face to match as close as possible to the output we want.
Mm-hmm.
And then we break it down into the different skin levels.
Okay.
Put the dermis and epidermis. Yes.
And how do you estimate what the dermis and epidermis looks like?
That is really hard. Yes. Actually, yeah.
So
we read papers on it, and we try to, because it's different people like to shade in different ways.
Yeah.
And for me, I like to keep things physical so that it will match reality as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to, from the knowledge that I have, the color in the skin comes from the light waves from the different layers of skin.
Mm-hmm.
So for the uppermost skin layer, from what I know, it's more like a green bluish tint to it. And then move on to a more like an orangey, fleshy feel in the lower level. So that is what we try to compensate for in our shading, but like putting in the albedo and like matching up the colors using the gamma nodes to get the correct results.
Right. Because that's basically what we did for Digital Emily and Mike, is we just used the albedo diffuse and just used that straight and just did a single subsurface on
that.
We did extract we get an extraction of the single scatter when we actually render that as a diffuse pass, but that's what we know it to do. So because the challenge, and this is, I mean, obviously we know is because you're doing it, is trying to figure out what that actually is.
Exactly.
And we know, like, you're guessing and you make it look till it looks right.
Yeah.
which is perfectly valid. But for us, it's like, how am I actually going to know exactly what that looks like? I'd have to peel my skin back, which is not going to be pretty.
And at the same time, how do we know that the light scatters the same way between humans?
Right.
Like Digital Emily is a young girl. Mm-hmm. And Mike is...
He's not.
Right. Yeah. So how do you know that the light
scatters? And in different skin colors as well, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. We don't see that many different skin colors in scans being made.
Yeah.
Mostly Caucasian people.
Yeah, exactly. So. We had... We did bring that up on one of our talks. It's like we probably should scan someone with dark skin and scan someone with, you know, different colored skins.
Yeah. But when you create the albedos from the ICT scans, do you compensate for the subsurface scattering in the albedo since it will be more blurred?
No, we just use it as is.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't like to get back some information? So, because it will be like double scattering.
Well, no, because we still, like... We do get the single scatter map, and that's done as a pure diffuse.
Okay.
So that keeps a lot of the detail in there.
Yeah.
We don't necessarily try to overcompensate because like you said, it does get blurred, but but it doesn't. Yeah, it's not that. It's not a huge
deal. It's not
deal.
That prominent.
Really, really, the area where you want the biggest detail is in the specular.
Yeah,
because that's where you're getting all of the pore definition and everything else.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, but you, like you said, you didn't use different color values for the different skin.
Nope, we basically did. We used the data we had to get what we could out of it. So we didn't actually separate out the three things. So we assumed based on the diffuse that is the total sum of all subsurface.
Of course. Yeah.
So we made a subsurface with that in mind. So that single, we just use a single subsurface scatter material.
Yeah.
And then we add in the diffuse to that, which comes from the single scatter map, and then we add in the specular from there,
Of course,
and that's it.
Okay, is that like the way to go? You think? Do you want to take it further? If you could,
we could, but I kind of like the simplicity.
Yeah, of course. If you can get it,
because
it
looks pretty good, just like that.
Yeah.
But it's also a good way for us to test different things, right? So, for example, can we actually get the different levels, or what are the choices to get the different levels of the different subsurface? Because really the skin shader is just three subsurface scatters and blended together, right?
Yeah.
Then we can also go, you know, if you're going to look at it in different subsurface methods, do we want to look at multipole versus dipole?
Yes.
Do you want to look at, you know, whatever you're going to try to look
at
to make your skin work? So there's different techniques that are pretty interesting to do.
But. Yeah. But like you said, the end result is what matters. So
Yeah. And so we look at the digital the WikiHuman data as your base, right?
Yeah.
Here is the simplest thing possible, and you're already this far along, so you don't have to reinvent the wheel. And from now, you can continue to improve on it or do whatever you need to do.
Exactly.
And that's now we give that back to the public to make those decisions. So
that's really a big applaud for you guys just sharing that stuff with us. So
I mean, you could, you know, if you're out there and you're trying to make a digital human, it's like, well, how does the WikiHuman data do it? And it's like, well, just grab it and try it yourself. You
exactly.
know,
just plug it in and try it out.
Yeah, exactly.
And people have done so many cool stuff with it as well, all over the internet. So it's cool to see how it's being used.
Yep.
And in different ways, different renderers.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's very different, like Blender and V-Ray.
Yeah. Well, we have Blender inside of V-Ray.
Yeah.
I mean, V-Ray inside of Blender.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting to see it in Cycles.
Exactly.
Or interesting to see it in Unity.
Yeah.
I've seen it in all kinds of random places. So it's been great. And I've actually been getting some really nice feedback from people that's saying, you know, it's really cool to see that, like, Philip the Prince, he works over at Pixar. He works on Render Man. He was saying, is it cool that I can use Daily Dancing? That's the whole point, dude.
Exactly.
Just go ahead and use the data and contribute. And I think if we all understand, you know, it's a very hard subject. So it's something that I don't think we should all tackle by ourselves. We can work on this together.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. It's so hard. So it's, and since you have the means to create more accurate results, it's such a good base for other people to take from.
Now, have you always been interested in digital humans, or
I could walk. I've always been creating humans.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, even before I started with 3D, I was always painting and drawing humans.
Really?
Yeah, so it was a natural transition for me to start sculpting humans.
That's interesting. Interesting. So what were you doing when you were younger? What was your thing that you, I guess you were always an artist, right?
Yeah.
Did you go to school for art?
I went to a school in Stockholm called Nakademin. Mm-hmm. It's a 2-year education to become a 3D artist.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, but other than that, I'm self-taught. So
yeah, a lot of people are.
Because nowadays, the vast amount of knowledge on the internet, it's hard to get that inside of a school as well. It's more like basic stuff nowadays, at least in Sweden, I think. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, I think you should spend a few years in school and then improve on top of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think people are taking some different approaches to things. Either way, you're going to learn. But I think, you know, what I've seen, I was just talking to the guys that won the VES award for the student award that are from Film Academy. And there it's like, they assume you already know a lot of it.
Yeah.
Like, so, and they treat you like you're a studio. So you learn a lot in that way. So.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's just to use the time in school to get out on different workplaces and studios to learn. It's equal important to get a fast pace in your art creation.
Yep.
So it's both the knowledge and the speed. So it's...
Yeah,
I think school is important.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, another question I was going to ask you. So you're talking about the different tools. What do you use to sculpt in mostly? ZBrush?
Yeah, ZBrush.
Okay. And then you're doing your hair. You said you did some of the hair in ZBrush as well, right?
Yeah. I do all the hair using fiber mesh.
Fiber mesh. Okay.
Yeah, and we then export the curves from that into Yeti.
Oh, into Yeti. Okay.
Yeah. So that's our main tool for creating hair, but for grooming, I think nothing compares to ZBrush.
Right.
And unless it's really short fur, then you can just groom away.
And you're using Maya, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're for most of the animation and rendering stuff, we use Maya.
Mm-hmm. Yeti's pretty good at doing dynamic stuff, right?
Yeah. Definitely.
Okay.
But we're also using Houdini and other softwares like that. So.
Okay.
And I guess you can render from Houdini now as well.
Yeah, we've got a V-Ray for Houdini that we've been working on.
Yeah.
It's been announced that it's coming soon, which has been pretty cool. It's in kind of an alpha state right now. And it's based on the app SDK, so it's a lot of our new brands or branches of V-Ray are all based on the app SDK, which allows it to continue to be updated faster. So we have to really just update app SDK, and then the rest of the connections are pretty easy. But it does change a little bit with Houdini in terms of how you can operate. So we'll see how that goes. But it's nice to see that there's been a lot of demand for Houdini. I think recently, like, this Houdini demand has gone up a lot.
It's a super great software, and so many people are starting to use it. Mm-hmm. So it is.
It used to be just like a handful of special effects guys, but now everyone's kind of using it in different ways.
Do you
use Houdini yourself?
No, I don't. But
It's complete. You have to think completely differently when you use it.
It's like ZBrush, but in a different way.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. ZBrush is like, okay,
turn off your brain, forget everything you ever did, exactly. And then start over again.
Yep. Yeah, and it's so customizable. Mm-hmm. So I haven't worked with a standard workspace in so many years.
Right.
Almost that I can't show another person that's sitting with
right. Like, I don't know setup. How to do this. Yeah.
Exactly. That's crazy. But it's... I love it.
Okay. Well, that's cool. Yeah. What about cloth stuff? What do you guys do for cloth?
Marvelous designer.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the way through.
Yeah.
I used to sculpt cloth the old-fashioned way, like yeah. looking at references, but it takes a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cloth, and it's so hard to get to know because it's so dynamic and it behaves in such different ways in different situations. Mm-hmm. So just getting that super realistic base out of marvelous mm-hmm. in so much less time than sculpting it.
And correct me if I'm wrong, because I haven't actually used it, but Marvelous Designer was made for
the fashion industry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it basically allows you to go out there and you create the swaths of clothes and it just forms around the character, right?
Exactly. Perfectly. Yeah. You create the patterns mm-hmm. like you would do in real life.
Mm-hmm.
And just cut and merge them together in the latest release
mm-hmm.
and just drape it over your character and adjust it
to
get those physical properties.
And it works really well, huh?
Yeah, really well. And since it's a simulation program, you can take in your animation caches as well mm-hmm. for the characters and just and let the animation roll and get a simulation cache from that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Of course, Marvelous will create like synthetic results because mm-hmm. it can't do like memory folds and stuff
mm-hmm.
which I would love to see in future releases
if
it's possible. So you have to hand sculpt the fine wrinkles in cloth.
Okay.
That is one thing that I spoke about in my presentation about Conan as well.
Yeah, tell me about that.
Since you can't get, like I said, the memory folds and creases. If you have a cloth, you will have small wrinkles all over just to get that sense of reality. So
mm-hmm.
for that, I use almost the same thing as for faces with the pore levels I spoke about.
Oh, you just added an extra displacement, man?
Yeah, I just use the alpha scans from another site. I think they're called Surface Mimic. Mm-hmm. Use scans for cloth and mm-hmm. folds mm-hmm. and fabric. So I just put that on top of the mesh, and since so fine details, you can have that as a displacement map and it won't disturb the folds of the simulation.
Right. Okay.
So it's a great way to get that extra level of reality.
That's a good idea. Look. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good way to work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a super great program.
Yeah.
Yeah. Since they released Marvelous Designer, I've cut off days from production time.
So, oh, really?
Yeah, definitely. So I can really recommend that program for anyone that wants to do cloth.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's good to know. That's good to know, let people know about that. So what's the other thing I was going to let you ask you about? What are next some of the other big projects you guys are working on? Can you tell us of anything that's really new?
Most of it's super secret.
Okay.
Yeah,
but you guys are going to hear some announcements soon? Or?
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Okay.
I think we have some stuff coming up that's really cool.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Sorry, I can't say more.
No, that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, it'd be great to you know, keep following you guys and seeing what's going on over there.
Yeah.
Do you guys ever make it out to Los Angeles?
We do. Mm-hmm. We do. Definitely. At least a few of the higher ups at the office.
Okay. Well, let us know if stop by the office and we're over in Culver City. So let us know when you guys are going to be there. It'd be good to see you guys.
It'd be awesome.
All right. Well, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
All right. Hopefully you'll be here at FMX next year, you think? We'll see.
We'll see.
I'll try to be here too.
Hopefully.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, guys. I'm going to let the last bucket drop, and I appreciate it. All right. Bye, guys.